Well, good morning. Here's a question. Did you miss us? I hope you did. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Welcome to the panel. It's very nice to have you with us. We have a great group this morning. We have a lot to talk about. And, you know, I don't know about you all, but every time I go out and I'm talking to people and they say, "You certainly don't have a shortage of things to talk about on the panel, do you?" And I said, "No, never, never."
It's stunning.
When we first started, every once in a while, I would struggle a little bit to find stories. And now it's just, you know, fish in a barrel. We have a lot of fish this morning, and we'll catch them right out of that barrel, and we'll get going. Let me introduce our panel to you. I don't know where Alan went, but I'll go the other way around the room. Teresa Bourgeois is here. She asked me not to ask her anything. I was going to say, "How are you?" But I won't even ask that. It's just nice to have you here.
It's just delightful to be here on this lovely morning.
Yes, it is a lovely morning, and
how do you define lovely?
I'm just trying to, you know.
Cheer us all up.
Just trying to cheer us up.
Okay, thank you.
You know,
thank you.
Just have to will it to be lovely. I'm sure it's lovely somewhere.
Well, it was lovely in my house, if you don't mind waking up and looking out the window and seeing the lawn covered in snow.
It's just unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
And I'm freezing.
My brother lives in North Carolina. He called me this morning. He's on his way up here. And he said, "Oh, what's the weather there?" And I said, "Well, it's snowing." And he said, "I'm in North Carolina. I don't want to leave." I can understand that.
And he's coming because?
Well, he's going to come up for the event tomorrow. Yeah.
Very exciting event
tomorrow. Yeah, I'll talk about that in a second. Ira Fussfield is with us. He is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good day. Nice to see you all.
Did you have a good cardio workout on the media project?
Yes, I thought it was pretty lively. And then at the end, we all ganged up on Alan because it just seemed the right thing to do.
All right, I'm going to get his perspective in just a second. But first, let me welcome to the program Vera Acarias-Kelly, who is a professor in comparative politics at Siena College in Loudonville, New York. And good morning to you.
Well, it's great to be back. Thanks.
Always wonderful to have you here. Did they all gang up on you, Alan?
They did. They're always so... you know, foo-foo-ish about the whole thing. They're always telling me what journalists should be, which we know all journalists aren't. So they're always defending the flag, you know, and we know that, number one. And number two, I say to everybody who's giving me a hard time, you can forget about my phone number, which is a quote from Andrew Cuomo. Last week, talk about stupid mistakes. You don't say something like that when you're running for public office because it makes you look like a bully.
What did I missed that one.
Oh, he was mad that people were giving money to Cynthia Nixon.
Yeah.
And he is quoted as having saying, "Tell them they can lose my phone number."
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I missed that one. I think
the fun in that is just beginning. But yeah.
Well, then he ought to learn how to contain himself, to be honest with you, because it doesn't help him. It makes him look bad.
And Cynthia Nixon was on Colbert last night and had a great appearance there. So there you go. All right, let's start. We have everybody has been introduced. I think I said good morning to
you. Yes, you did.
Oh, yeah.
Introduced Vera?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Ira, I'd like you to meet Vera. Vera is a professor of comparative politics at Siena College. Lovely.
Short-term memory.
I rise overworked.
Well, good morning and welcome to the roundtable. Welcome to our panel, and we'll get started here. We do have a lot to talk about. There's, as we said, there's no shortage of things to talk about. I do want to mention real quick, as Teresa alluded to, we do have our climate change discussion, our roundtable panel tomorrow. And if you have tickets, you want to use them. They're there. Now, here's what happened. We were sold out, and we had a point yesterday where we were sold out. And then we put a thing on, they sent out a reminder for people, you know, if you can't use your tickets. And some people said, "Oh, I can't go at the last minute." So we have, as of right now, we have 16 tickets remaining. So that were taken and now are free. So you still have a chance. If you'd like to, you just go to wamc.org. I'm reminding you of that, but also reminding you to listen in tomorrow 9 to 11, where Alan and I will host Judith Eng, Jeff Goodall, Elizabeth Colbert and Terry Tempest Williams for our Climate Change Panel on Earth Day weekend. That is coming up tomorrow at Page Hall in Albany, New York, and we would love to have you join us if you can. But again, you heard the scant number, so hurry up if you want in. All right, let's go.
Man, excuse me, you don't want folks to show up at 8:55. What time should they arrive?
8:30. Doors, well, you know, doors open at 8:30. So you want to get there. Then we have to figure out how to get 800 people into an auditorium quickly so we can be on the air by 9.
That's what I was thinking.
Yes, thank you.
And Joe's warm-up is always worth the price of admission.
Thank you. All right, let's go to the news of the day and to the stories. And we begin with the president saying, you know what, if the North Korea talks are not fruitful, I will... And this is, I think, a key word for the president. I will respectfully leave. That's what the president says. So does that bode well for what's going to happen if you say I'm going to respectfully leave?
I think it's part of what he sees as his technique, which is negotiation. He puts something on the table. He takes it off. He gets angry. He pre-organizes the way that he's doing things. He sees that as the way to do this. That's the end
of he has to have some idea about what he's going to encounter from Pompeo, having met with North Korea. So he either, if it looks real bad, he could pull out tomorrow. So he must feel like there's a chance for something to happen. But you're right. Respectfully is not a word I usually associate with
And
Trump.
Let's remember, this guy is a brutal dictator. Yeah. And I'm not talking about Trump. I'm talking about, you know, Korea.
He's a brutal dictator wannabe.
Remind people a little bit about that, Alan.
Yeah.
He's
a brutal dictator. And we know that his word has not been good in the past, nor has Trump's word, by the way, been good. So it may well be that the day after the thing, he decides I'll set off another nuclear explosion. You haven't walked out before it's over, but, you know, what does that mean?
So one of the thoughts I wanted to bring up is, do you all remember when President Trump had his last State of the Union address and how he emphasized North Korea's brutality? He had the family of Otto Warmbier attend, and he discussed in detail the suffering this young man went through, in addition to he had some North Koreans that had escaped under the most perilous circumstances, lost limbs along the way. What we see now is the beginning of a theater performance. Both President Trump and the dictator of North Korea are beginning to posture, put on a performance for their own domestic consumption. So I find it overall pretty interesting that Pompeo came back and he did not announce, or President Trump did not announce, that one of the three Korean Americans imprisoned for lengthy periods of time in North Korea were allowed to leave, at least one. So both sides seem to be using sort of a hardcore posturing position to figure out whether this encounter will in fact take place. I am not confident that the meeting will take place, because none of the North Korean Korean American prisoners were released. I expected one to return with Pompeo.
Don't you think China is pulling the strings?
Yes.
I mean, he had that meeting a couple of weeks ago in China, the famous meeting where Kim showed up on the secretive train. Yep. And, you know, it's hard to imagine that whatever is going on now between this meeting, purported meeting, and the meeting of the Mayans supposedly between North and South Korea, is the coincidence cannot be ignored. There's something happened in those meetings in China that have Kim going in this direction.
And to say nothing of any Chinese meetings with the Americans. Certainly there's some back channeling going on there also. Mm-hmm. So what's really tough about this discussion is we don't have the facts.
We don't have the facts, and a large number of people in this country and elsewhere around the world simply don't trust this president, our president, to handle this with any kind of intelligence or tact, and it's just not a very, I guess the word that comes to my mind is safe feeling, thinking this guy is going to be meeting with Kim and what's going to happen as a result.
Well, you know, I watched last night the president, and I had such a feeling of revulsion that was incredible how the Democrats were doing all these terrible things to him and how there's absolutely no collusion. And I haven't fired Mueller and Rosenstein yet. And I was just holding on to my tummy because I found it so awful. So, look, we do know one thing about this president. He's a liar. But the question we have is, when he tells a lie, does he truly believe himself? If you put the Allen, lie detector on his arm, and you said, "Are you lying?" and he said, "No," would you get a flat line or would you get a wavy line? Flat line being the truth. And that, I think, has a lot to do with how we can appreciate what's going on here.
One of the things is, in watching that press conference, that I was trying to remember, and I don't know, and maybe you guys would remember, have previous presidents, in the presence of a foreign visitor, foreign dignitary, talked in that way, answered questions about internal political issues?
I don't believe that they have, but I think the reason they haven't done it is because the press has had such precious little opportunity to ask Trump questions, that the kinds of questions they're asking him are not the kinds of questions you would normally ask in that setting. Normally, if you had the president of Japan and the president of the United States, the questions would be about why they're meeting and all of that sort of stuff. But they have an opportunity to ask Trump about, Stormy Daniels or whatever it is. It's because they can't ask him any other time. So I think you're right. You don't usually see it, but that's partly because he doesn't give us a chance to ask him questions.
I really couldn't remember. I mean, I remember them asking, but in my memory, they deflect them, In that it's just a...
Because they have a foreign
decorum,
dignitary, right, guest right next to them.
Right. It just seemed so odd to me, and I thought, am I misremembering?
Might also remember from last night that Shinzo Abe at some point started laughing or grinning when President Trump began to talk about there is no collusion. You know, he redirected, you could just capture that moment, Shinzo Abe has a grin on his face because he can't believe this theater performance, really. Yeah. He's not used to that, from his cultural context for sure. But then this is beyond what he has ever seen. I
was struck when the Baltic leaders were with him, and he was taking questions with them, and he was saying to the Baltic journalists, pick on them because they're real news and our journalists are fake news. So, I mean, there's also that aspect into those press
I remember that didn't happen. Yeah, that was shocking.
Yep. One of the things I wanted to mention about North Korea, though, what might actually undermine the meeting taking place for a very simple reason is that both leaders may not be able to agree on where to meet because the dictator of North Korea does not fly. He takes a train, which really severely limits the opportunities to meet somewhere on neutral ground. The Trump administration has suggested Switzerland, has suggested a Scandinavian country.
I heard Mongolia, right?
Mongolia has been suggested, which would be a possibility because you can get there by train. But right. I don't know that President Trump really wants to do that. And he's being advised against a location that would...
China.
Well, he has been advised to not meet in a location that would look like he is caving to a demand by North Korea. So that makes the demilitarized zone a complication, Mongolia very difficult, and China nearly impossible, I would think.
So this again goes to your theory that this may not even happen.
Yes, and it's nothing but a theory.
A hunch.
When Trump said that if things aren't going well, I'll leave, which presumes that they're at a meeting, things aren't going well. What struck me, and I know people say, they're making progress. So the way the diplomatic process typically works is that their assistants meet, they talk, they work out some details, and then the principals go and they announce them.
Right.
You know, that you know in advance, it's scripted what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So this idea of I'll go and if it's not going well, I'll walk out, that just runs counter to how the process typically works. Now I can imagine people saying, well, it hasn't worked this way so far, let's do something else. Maybe they have a point. I don't know. But it just struck me as just not even understanding how the process of these high-level meetings typically work.
I'm sticking with my narrative, which is that China set the whole thing up, and China is the guarantor here, and that's what's going on.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll have letters, and we'll talk more. We have many other topics to discuss. Alan Chartok is here. Vera Karius-Kelly. We have Ira Fussfeld and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. All that we ask you to do is to keep them short. We ask you not to include links. We ask you to just read them over first so we know that you're actually, you know, that we understand what you're trying to say. Because believe me, that can be very difficult without verbs. So panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And when we come back, we will continue our conversation right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our battle discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. It is 34 minutes past 9 o'clock. We have Alan Chartok, Vera Karius-Kelly, Ira Fussfeld, and Teresa Bourgeois. Let us talk about some other things that are making news. And as we said, we have a lot to get to. I want to talk about Syria. We've talked about it a little this week, but I want to get back to it. Lawmakers from both parties expressed alarm Wednesday over President Trump's plan to forge ahead with the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria, particularly in the absence of what they see as a viable strategy to secure American objectives there. In a House hearing, members repeatedly challenged the State Department's top officials on the Middle East and Russia to explain how the administration planned to reach its stated goals of defeating the Islamic State, building a stable Syria without President Assad, and keeping his Russian and Iranian backers from taking over. That from the Washington Post.
You know, it's interesting because there's a certain narrative that's going on now in which the Russians are quoted as saying they don't want Assad there either, which, of course, I don't believe, which is that after this is all settled, then we can talk to Assad about leaving. And I keep seeing that popping up all over the place. I don't believe that either. And I don't think, to your point, Joe, that we do have any great objectives for what we want to do there. I don't get it.
Well, just as I was saying regarding Korea, I just have no level of confidence in what this administration may or may not be doing in Syria or elsewhere around the world, because the talent and experience level is almost non-existent. There's no bench in the State Department. There's no leader in the State Department. You know, we've had presidents with whom I've disagreed, but I don't know that there have been any with whom I just thought was not capable of doing the job, even in advancing their own point of view, even if I disagreed with the point of view. I don't have any confidence at all in this administration.
Okay, Ira. So let me ask you this. Suppose, because I think we have to consider this, Trump pulls it off.
Well, then kudos to him.
Well, so for example, with North
Korea.
North Korea, for example. Let's assume, you know, he's got this meeting now. Let's assume that North Korea, perhaps under the aegis of China, decides we're going to get rid of our nukes. We're not going to do that anymore. It could be verifiable. What in the world are people going to say now? What if he gets something done in Syria the same way?
Well,
yes, go ahead.
Okay, I fundamentally question this approach, because we're only thinking of what happens if, you know, all these dictators agree to what our demands are from the U.S. government.
Right.
I mean, they have no incentive to agree to everything that the United States government demands. Giving up your nuclear weapons in North Korea, what's the dictator going to get in exchange? In Syria, it might be possible that President Trump is thinking that he can wage war against Islamic State and box in the Iranians through proxy wars. Uh-huh. He thinks he can hire other governments to fight the wars for America. I mean, that's his approach. We know we have U.S. contractors fighting in Syria. So maybe he can withdraw the troops, but use contractors instead. I mean, there are all kinds of things that through which, you know, the American public thinks maybe we won't have any troops there. Well, try contractors, because they're already in there doing their thing. So this is
Will the American public care?
Well, I mean, when the coffins come back, maybe they will care.
Of the contractors?
Yes.
Did you notice in the press conference yesterday, he talked about the fight in Syria a month ago between our troops and Russian troops.
Mm-hmm.
I was stunned that he talked about that.
Well, I mean, so casually on top of it, you know, like the Russians have their contractors, their foreign fighters, their mercenaries
right,
in there.
But he didn't use those terms. The diplomats were very mm-hmm. quick to say that these were not Russian troops.
Because the Russians didn't acknowledge the fact that they were.
The Americans and Russians were fighting, and there he said it in a press conference.
Well, I think you have to understand what's going on with this guy. He's got a big problem with the Russians. The rope is getting more and more taut. We know that. And so he takes a step back, as he did the last couple of days, and said, no, we're not going to do anything to the Russians. We're not going to do the sanctions, which Nikki Haley talked about. What was that? He was concerned about that, obviously. So now when he gets a chance to say, we fought the Russians, it helps him with his narrative.
Yeah, but what they worked really hard in this surgical strike was to make sure that they didn't affect any Russians. Right.
Yes, but that's the truth. What he's not interested in is the truth. He's interested in the perception.
Because that's a line you don't want to cross, which they crossed, and then everybody was shocked by it. But the other thing, to Vera's point, I've noticed that in all of these press conferences, he speaks quite a bit about the huge arms sales.
Mm-hmm.
And Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, in a hearing the other day on Yemen, he gave this impassioned speech and spoke quite a bit about the large arms sales in the region mm-hmm. that the U.S. is doing. And to your point, Vera, you know, maybe these things, if I sell everybody else arms, let them do the fighting. I don't know if there is a strategy.
It seems.
But
huge
arms sales to the Saudis, huge arms sales to Qatar. The Baltics talked mm-hmm. about the huge arms sales there. And you notice with Abe, he was questioned. Trump talked about the arms sales to Japan, which is very unusual, by the way. And when the Japanese reporters asked Abe about the arms sales, he did not answer those questions. Twice he was asked, mm-hmm. and twice he deflected those questions about the arms sales.
Because he has a filter. Trump has no filter. He just speaks.
That.
He says what's on his mind. He's mercurial. Today we're going to do this. Tomorrow we're not going to do this. That's why I think the whole thing is so frightening, because I just simply don't believe this guy can be trusted.
And the lack of precision in his language to sort of mix up mercenaries with, you know, troops killings. And
calling them
God,
Russian troops.
That was.
I was shocked that there wasn't more attention to that.
You are not the intended audience, either of you.
No, well, I guess we're not. But we still hear what he says.
If you're thinking about a negotiation with, if you're thinking about a negotiation with North Korea, nuance, you know, words matter. Nuance matters. But to Vera's point, what is North Korea's incentive? The only thing is China. I mean, China really has leverage because of the fuel, food, and such that
they provide. It's not such a thing as the only thing they have. It is the thing. We heard from Alan in Medina, who says, I agree with Vera on North Korea. I always wonder, what legal ground does the U.S. have to insist Kim disarm nukes while we increase ours? Well, I've often wondered about that particular question.
Well, and of course, ironically, standing next to the Prime Minister of Japan while he's demanding that another country, you know, irony of that.
Yeah, and you better believe that the Chinese have said to the North Koreans, we need you to do this. We're doing well in terms of international relations, in terms of our trade. We need you to do this. And don't worry, if they send a nuke to you, we'll send our nukes back at them. I'm sure of that.
All right. We have just about 3 minutes, so let's do letters.
We have some letters.
Oh, yeah,
yes,
we do.
Yeah. Yep. That's nice. Okay. Kevin from Melrose, 55300. When will the next shoe drop in the Russia investigation? I'm getting a little bored. Oh, I'm so sorry. Who's next? Any thoughts, Pano? You guys make my morning bearable.
You know, I have to say, well, thank you, but I have to say, I find this far from boring. I think the last couple, last Friday was the whole thing with, Thursday when they brought the Cohen matter to the
Southern District.
I think this is still has some. Is that a good excitement pace?
I think he had his tongue in his cheek. In other words, I think he's saying, you know, this stuff goes up, goes by every day. In the last 10 minutes, there hasn't been anything. So I'm getting bored.
But it's also, I also think sometimes these kinds of developments are harder to follow because they're technical, legal, and,
yes.
You know, and it's not so, I mean, you really have to sort of pay very close attention and read about it to understand it all. It's sometimes exhausting, I find.
Well, now this whole business of getting a special master to examine whether or not this is doable or not,
right.
This business of
I mean, the things you learn every day about the process of the legal system, I do at least, you know, I'm amazed.
But I think the boredom boredom is the byproduct of watching any of the three, but more likely two of the three cable news networks. And if you watch them relentlessly after 7 o'clock at night, and we're the rehash and hash and rehash and hash.
Which is why they are, which why either they're lying when they say breaking news again and again.
I
agree with you. I just got cable back after not having it for a while, and I've been trying to watch and sort of flipping through, and it's just relentless. And there's so, for instance, the IRS computer systems went down on tax day, and you know that's not a story. Can you imagine if in the Obama administration the IRS tax system had gone down?
Well, they're reporting it, but they can't do panels on that. I mean, frankly, what are we discussing? It's easy to discuss it, but if you listen day after day after day and nothing new has happened, you could say, all right, I'm bored by that.
But a lot new is happening, and the way you discuss that is, what are the implications for underfunding the IRS? The tax collection, you know, what are the basic functions of government? Is this guy who's the president of the United States governing properly? One of the basic functions of government is the IRS, you know, the tax collection system that didn't work.
Jay from Lenox says,
I just have to take a quick break.
Oh, sure.
And then when I come back, you can tell us about Jay from Lenox.
Absolutely.
So we'll just put Jay from Lenox. Is it a short letter?
Yeah, very short.
Yeah, just do that one then.
Hypothetically,
what
would happen if the press did not report on Trump for a couple of days, as he hates having anyone upstage him? In other words, Nikki Haley, and that's Jay from Lenox.
Well, how do you not report on the president of the United States?
But, you know, I kind of think it's an interesting experiment to think about. Just
give
him so much air and report on some other things that are happening.
Well, their rallies, they have not been carrying him live as much.
And you know, he says something ludicrous,
but
the
you're referring to is cable news.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of media and responsible media out there. And it's not as over. You've got to take a break. This is too long an answer.
All right. Keep it short. I got to take a break. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan is here with letters in hand, so
I've got them right in here in my hand.
Go.
All right. It says here from Dan. I'm curious, does anyone on the panel believe that there is a chance that North Korea will actually give up their nuclear weapons? I find it ludicrous that mainstream media seems to be holding that out as a possibility. Kim Jong-un is never giving up his nuclear weapons. Never.
I would agree. I mean, what's the point? His entire dictatorship is based on the power of nuclear weapons.
He'll give them up if China promises to cover for him.
That's what I think. I think China is the key here. Always have. And China does not. They need China desperately in order not to starve. And
China needs them as a buffer.
Yes, right. So I think that maybe it could, but maybe what'll happen is they'll say, okay, you can keep what you've got, but you can't use it ever again, and you can't. There may be some middle ground.
But the thing is, they could make a deal as they've done in the past, and then just renege on that deal. Which is more likely a scenario.
Without question. Bobby says, House GOP setting up Rosenstein to get fired. Good morning, panel. The House Judiciary Committee is requesting documents from the Justice Department about Comey's memos. With the Justice Department unlikely to turn those over, is the House GOP setting precedent to fire Rosenstein? These extremist House Republicans is the result of gerrymandering. Eric Holder for president. Thanks, Bobby from Bennington. I watched Eric Holder on the on the air the other day. Very impressive. Very impressive man. Somewhat laconic. And I don't know that that's what you need.
Questioning. I've never thought of him as laconic.
He was not exactly exciting in the way he was presenting his opinions.
I don't know that he has sort of a broad public following, or that he's well known in terms of as somebody who can garner political support. I mean, he's a thoughtful, deeply intelligent man.
Well, we keep hearing that he may run for president.
No,
which is we keep hearing that. I don't know if that's the case, but I do think that you have to have a certain emotional appeal to people in order to make it happen. Now, the one thing we do know is that Obama won twice. And part of that was that it was a signal for African-Americans and others to come out and vote for him in a way that that population never had before. So there may be some thinking that since Holder is African-American, it leaves a potential for another victory for the Democrats. Nobody wants to touch that. No.
Anybody want to touch that? No.
I'd like to see a little bit more laconic than given what we're seeing these days out of Washington. Right. I don't know. I had never heard of Holder as a presidential candidate.
Right. I hadn't heard him as a presidential candidate at all. But he is certainly methodically, actively working on this gerrymandering issue state by state and doing that impressively.
Let's talk to Reed from TM, who says, the administration's Syrian strategy. Perhaps this is too simplistic a perspective, but it is not this administration's strategy in Syria merely to allow Russia to have its way. Thanks and be well. Tim from Austerlitz, home of the
outcome of this.
I have a sense that generally speaking, that the American public does not care very much about what's going on in Syria. I think the chemical weapons on their own people are horrifying, and I think that they believe that what little Trump did is enough to send a message. But I just think the people in this country, by and large, are fed up with the Middle East. I'm not saying that's the right position to take. I'm not even saying I'm right, but I do think that's the position. On the other hand, I do think people are concentrating on North Korea because of the nukes. There are people who have been living with Korea since the war in the early 50s, and they sort of have an attachment to that issue. But I think if Trump were to walk away from Syria tomorrow, I don't think he'd be vilified, except by some people in his own party.
You're a wise man.
I agree with you, Ira. I think that people wouldn't care. And in fact, the opposite, if the U.S. went back in with more military folks, and if we then took responsibility for rebuilding of Syria, which has been devastated, then a lot of his base would be very, very unhappy about that.
Anyway, Larry has written, Korea / Trump. Trump will make a deal. He is needy and desperate to look presidential. The fear is, how bad will the deal be? The Iran deal demonstrated America is a pushover. So I expect Trump to give away whatever strategic leverage we have in Southeast Asia.
Except the Iran deal was not Trump's, and he would agree that the Iran deal was a pushover, and he does not want to be a pushover, allegedly, on this deal.
Well, I disagree with the idea of a pushover anyways. I think it was the first step towards attempting to bring Iran into the fold, and it could have worked long term if, in fact, we would have pursued the idea, along with Cuba, to engage diplomatically, long-term, and economically with these countries. Because Iran, for example, has a very high percentage of young people. that are desperate for change. They're looking not only to be educated, but also find jobs after graduation from university. Young Iranians are very pro-American. They would love to pursue opportunities to access free media, to pursue economic and social reform. But the more the United States pushes back against this Iran deal, the higher the chance that the very hard conservatives will continue to dominate. And that, in essence, makes me sad, because we could have had a better relationship with Iran, much higher chance than the North Koreans, in my estimation.
And you think the Ayatollahs would give it up?
No, but they would experience tremendous pressure from within. And I think that's what we should, as our long-term strategy, pursue, to empower young Iranians to internally reform the system. Women and young people overall are going to be in the majority in the country in no time, within the next sort of 5 years. And what we are doing is a disservice to young Iranians.
Well, your students are so lucky to have you. I mean that. Okay. And Anthony writes, "The mouse that roared. Good morning, panel. Can somebody there please explain to me how a country who does not have the ability to fly their leader 3,000 miles possibly be a nuclear threat to America and the world?" And that's from Anthony.
Or feed its people.
Yeah, well, if they've got them and they feel the end is near for themselves, there's at least a potential scenario where they do something despicable. You know, I mean, we know that there are people who blow themselves up. Could a country blow themselves up?
I think these dictators are predominantly focused on their personal survival. If you look at Assad and family, if you look at Gaddafi's behavior, I mean, you look at these types and they're really interested in survival. And so
some of them guess wrong.
What's that?
Some of them guess wrong.
Well, some of them guess wrong, but to the end, they struggle to remain in power. And so I think we can expect the same or pattern like that in North Korea. I think that the Chinese will only aid our overall foreign policy approach towards North Korea if they get a good deal. And I'm not sure that Trump has really sent that message to the Chinese because of all the economic disputes that we have or potentially will have. So it's really overall a piecemeal approach to our foreign policy. It doesn't, you know, with the sort of posturing behavior in the diplomatic arena doesn't fit our economic policies. So as long as we have a piecemeal approach, the puzzle will not come together, and it will not be clear to anyone where we're going.
We heard from Janos in Great Barrington. So you ask why we are in Syria. Hint, to facilitate pipeline from Qatar to Western Europe. Do you think we are there just to spread democracy? It's about money, oil, and weapons. If you think it's about anything else, you are being naive or don't want to admit the truth. And that's from Janos in Great Britain.
Well, I think part of the reason, obviously, the calculus is the Islamic State. That was one of the predominant motivations. Are there economic interests? You bet.
Oh, yeah.
And what about Qatar?
Yeah, and Qatar all of a sudden is in friendly relationship again. And, you know, we'll see what...
But the impasse with the Saudis is not resolved.
No. But, well, we'll see. We will see. I think it's a temporary impasse.
Let's go to David, who says, assuming one exists, what about meeting at the Swiss embassy in China? Kim can get there via train, and the embassy is technically sovereign, neutral ground. Best regards. Now, you had a president of the United States who tweeted yesterday that if he doesn't like what's going on, he's going to walk out. So he needs a place he can walk out of a lot easier than China, don't you think?
Are we aware of why he is not flying? Is he afraid to fly, or is he does not have the presidential
equipment?
Well, there
was an interesting story, Ira, in the paper the other day saying that while they are advanced in nuclear weapons and other things in North Korea, they have lousy airplanes.
But also some suspect that he doesn't fly.
Yeah.
Because they've never seen him fly.
He doesn't really go abroad very much either. Can't so, I mean, the only place he's gone to is China.
But the Chinese could send a plane. I mean, it's, you know, that's not, that's a fixable problem. But it's.
But I want to come back to the location. I don't think President Trump really wants to meet in a location that makes him look possibly as somebody who's not in charge. So
he'll go if there's a golf course there.
At the Swiss Embassy in China.
Sure.
So is there, so is there a place? Like, does Trump have can a you suggest a place? No. I mean, obviously they could go to the. They could go to the same place they've been talking for all of these years, right?
All right, Ray Graff is ready to give us the news. So
how about those Mets, Ray?
We yield to him. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. Very nice to have you with us. Alan is here, Alan Chartok. We have Vera Karius-Kelly. Ira Fussfeld is checking the entries at Aqueduct this afternoon.
And, the Yonkers.
Yeah, is it Yonkers now?
That's all right. I follow the Trotters.
Okay. And,
but that's not what I was doing.
And Teresa Bourgeois is with us. Good morning, all.
What a panel.
Very nice. A really great group. Okay. You have letters there, Alan. Yeah. Do those, and we'll get on to some other stuff.
We're increasingly desperate on this panel trying to figure out what's going on with this dreadful foreign policy situation. We are.
Okay. So Roger says, Pompeo, any thoughts on the GOP's talking point that Pompeo is now worthy of being Secretary of State just because he's had one successful trip to North Korea and only, quote, maybe successful given Vera's point earlier, or that continuity now is overwhelmingly important? And that's from Roger, who says, thanks.
Talking points, yeah. I'm sort of, you know, the horror to me is the issue with his endorsement of torture methods, of course, that he seemed to be comfortable with. And then the other thing, that he has uttered such horrific anti-Muslim bias in the past. So those are some of the things that I worry about deeply when it comes to Pompeo. I think he may run into a little bit of pushback. It seems like Rand Paul, of course, is also pushing back. But then, you know, I fear that he will be confirmed.
I agree.
What do you think,
you.
Teresa? You're thinking about something.
I agree with you.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm not sure he gets through the committee, but he'll get. He might get the floor vote, the Senate floor vote. But I think this, and people say, well, he was they gave him approval to be CIA director.
Yeah.
But that's different than being the top diplomat. How can you have the top diplomat of the United States as someone who has been so vocally opposed to Muslims?
I know. It's just really
disturbing. And not once or twice.
Because there's an assessment made that this country is racist and doesn't like Muslims. And if that's their case, that's what they're going
to
do.
It seems to confirm more of it.
Do I think it's justified? No. But that's what I suspect. I say he's going to get through. I agree with you guys. And this is more just 101 Trumpism.
And it also seems to affirm the fear in a lot of countries, or the general perception, that the State Department is equal to the CIA. I mean, this is one
that
of those,
good point.
You know, worrisome points for diplomacy, because, you know, we know that some diplomats' partners have been spies.
That's
and now
brilliant.
We have the head of the CIA become the head of the State Department. Good Lord.
I agree with you, but I want to say one other thing. I can end this conversation right now. The first, George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, President of the United States. They didn't stop him from having been the head of the CIA, right?
But that's not going from the CIA to state.
Yeah.
Oh, please. It's going from being the head of the CIA to president of the United States. You don't see that?
Well, I mean, that is
also an
issue.
I think it's different.
But the sort of two sort
different.
Of merge in this. I mean, everything's different, but particularly this point is worrisome, I think, for a lot of leaders, for the diplomatic community to think this is an obvious merging and coming together in this intersection of the State Department with the CIA. I know these things have happened in the past, but not as openly, not as directly, this sends a very negative message about the future of the work that diplomats will do in the State Department.
So all good points, and I don't disagree with you. I'm just simply saying it is what it is, to quote Governor Cuomo.
Right, I'm just trying to make
Does that put diplomats at risk?
I hear you. You're wonderful.
Does that put diplomats at risk?
Yes, of course it does. I mean, you can't really be taken seriously as a diplomat. You're constantly under suspicion that you are informing the CIA, that you're on the CIA payroll. It makes your...
Really?
Yes.
You think that there's an assumption that that goes on?
Yes.
All the time?
Of course.
That people talk to each other?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
Okay. Scott says, but sorry.
Glad we got that cleared up.
Sorry, but I'm the guy who says that Mueller invest. I'm with the guy who says that the Mueller investigation has gotten really boring. Sadly, this whole process is most likely to turn out to be a big nothing. To which I say, as I have from my youth, you want to bet. I think Mueller's going to come in. I think he's going to have it all. And I think there is going to be hell to pay among the presidential.
Well, I have a recommendation for this gentleman, and I do say so with all due respect. But if he feels this stuff is boring, get that remote control and turn on another channel. Or go to Amazon Prime and watch Bosch, which is one of the great detective series of all time.
Isn't it good this season?
I'm halfway through, so don't give me any spoilers.
All right. No, I haven't seen it all yet.
Just watch the Red Sox. But watch.
How do you get that stuff anyway? I mean, you know, like if you go to Amazon Prime, what?
Well, you have to buy it.
You have to buy. Where do
I mean,
you
have
buy
to be
it?
A member of Amazon Prime. So you go to Amazon,
and yeah, then you buy Amazon Prime,
and then you get that, and then you
just sign in and
enjoy.
It's like Netflix.
And where do you watch it? You watch it on your device.
You can watch it on your TV. You can watch it on your device.
You
can.
How do you get it from your device to the TV?
It's harder with Amazon because they do not cast it to the TV without an Amazon product
or an app. They do have an app.
Yes.
I feel like we're at a Senate hearing right now.
Well, okay. I have Google Chromecast.
Just
Google Chromecast.
That's a great line. Thank you.
Well, at any rate, it can be difficult, but it's worth it.
So, Ira, if you'll share this with us, how much do you and your wonderful wife spend on getting television?
How much money or how much time?
No, how much money?
Oh,
In other words, you got to buy the cable system, Amazon Prime, you got to buy the Google whatever.
Oh,
Or you can have sons who have those accounts and you borrow their account.
Well, that's right.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what you're allowed to do. They allow you to have upwards of five, I think.
Wow. I have, you know, Alan talks about this during the fund drive of, you know, there's one person and you're carrying five people on your back during the fund drive. Yeah, I've got my entire family on my back my Netflix and Amazon.
Oh, you mean they all use your password?
You actually pay
for Amazon Prime, but not for the programming. You pay for it for the delivery and purchases. This is an add-on. But Netflix and Hulu, I use my son's accounts.
So here they can, right now, the Senate Judiciary is going to have a hearing on the Judicial Nomination and Special Counsel Independence and Integrity Act. So he can turn off CNN and turn on C-SPAN and watch that.
I'm serious about this cable stuff. I've talked about it here and on the Media Project. You get a disproportionate sense of the importance of the world, of the importance of certain subjects, and how much what the media thinks it's important if all you watch is the cable news networks at night. Mm-hmm. I mean, Barbara Bush died the other day. Fine woman by all accounts, nothing bad to say about her, but it went wall to wall on the cable news channels. There's entirely too much coverage. Now, the New York Times.
You said there was too much coverage of Barbara Bush?
Absolutely. On TV. Now, you pick up the New York Times the next morning, below the fold, there was a story, an obituary. It jumped inside, it took up a full page, which is a considerable amount of space for the New York Times. So they did her justice, but it didn't dominate the newspapers like it did on cable news shows. You report it, you have tributes, but you don't have to go wall to wall.
Okay,
did you go wall to wall here?
Ira, you're now, we had Carl Castle too, so we had to be fair about this. But let me ask you this. You're the news director at CNN or MSNBC or at Fox. How exactly do you determine which stories are going to be played?
You determine it based on what your view is of their importance and of their interest.
You do not. You put your finger up in the air.
No,
you
wet
your
finger.
What do they want? And I'm going to give them what they want.
You do a disservice to journalists who know what they're doing and who have experience.
I don't. You're the one who's been complaining about what they're playing.
You're saying that they do it by putting their finger in the wall.
Not in the wall. They wet their finger and see which way the wind is blowing, what the people want, and they give it. Otherwise, they're an ex-news director.
Yeah.
Okay. So Frederica writes, news reporting. Hi, panel. What about Trump news? What about if Trump News is relegated to the last story? I refer you to what I just said, as the British Prime Minister always says during question time. It look kind of like when there is a minor local story, I'm tired of missing other important stories because the news is overtaken by Trump. And that's from Ricky in Troy.
Well, one of the interesting things on one of the local stations, their advertising for their news is, you know, if you've had enough of Washington news, turn to us.
Yeah.
You know, national news, turn to us.
Yeah, that'll work. Gail says, Syria. There are many people who don't care about the people of Syria. Imagine if Russia, China, Iran, or Korea said, the Americans are poisoning their people in Flint, Michigan. They are, quote, bad people. They have crossed a red line in capital letters. If you really care about life in capital letters, you care about life and humanity around the world, that world from that's from Gail. But we're not talking about one person or 10 people or everybody on this panel. We're talking about the American population as a whole and what they want.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I don't know that I agree with you that the American people tell us in foreign policy what we want. What leadership's responsibility is in a democracy is also to educate the general public about what is important in foreign policy. And as the United States, I would think it is exceptionally important to send a message that mass murder, genocidal activities are of interest to the American public in the sense that we stand for certain values. The fact that bothers me a lot is that we send a message to Assad in terms of not using nuclear or chemical weapons, but he constantly uses barrel bombs, which are horrific weapons, and he bombs civilian neighborhoods, hospitals, along with the help of the Russians. Now, if we stand for specific values, I would think this should be in the interest of the American public, and it is the responsibility of the administration to educate the public about what is going on and why we should care.
But, Professor.
Yes.
Comma. I agree with you. I think you're absolutely right. It's not what I'm arguing about. I'm arguing about the fact that, and I think it was Ira who brought it up in the beginning, that people are the determiners of what is going to be on the news and what we're going to be watching. You're right. You should take your finger and wag at them, at the American people, and say, come on, American people, barrel bombs are terrible, they are. You know, chemical weapons are terrible, they are. But if Ira's right, and they're sick of the Middle East and they don't want to hear it, and you're the news director, you listen.
I don't know how this idea of being sick of the Middle East is even acceptable. You know, the United States bombs, you know, certain countries into, you know, horrific. I mean, you know, the reality, when we look at the Middle East, the United States participated actively in the destruction of some entire areas and neighborhoods, made a commitment to embracing democracy, you know, supports the, you know, Saudis in terms of bombing Yemen and the Yemeni population. I mean, overall, it's pretty horrific. And to just say, well, now we're sick of it. I mean, this
Band-Aid approach
that we're not even dealing with what we leave behind.
Come on, don't put words in my mouth. The fact is, let's go to Yemen, which you just referenced. Do the American people care about the terrible, terrible things that are going on in Yemen?
Well, they don't know about it because there's no coverage ever.
Well, how do you know about it? How do I know about it?
Well, I read about it. I read various sources. I read international sources.
We carry this stuff. We carry it all the time. And you see, oh, that's over there. That's Yemen. I don't know. Let me read this later.
But, Alan, we're paying for it. And one of the things I think...
Yes, we are.
One of the things that I think is being lost in the coverage of what's going on in North Korea, and Vera, you speak to this, you're much better at it than me, is what their leadership has done to their people, and even his own relatives.
Yeah, I mean, horrific executions on the most dreadful circumstances. I don't even want to describe what these people do. But we simply do not focus on the specificity of each of the countries. What is going on? Why is it going on? What can we do about it? What does our diplomatic effort look like? We don't have a diplomatic effort in Syria. How can you not have a diplomatic plan, a strategy, something to prevent, you know, Russia and Iran to fulfill its goals, its regional goals? We are withdrawing from playing any role other than selling arms and to various groups and flourishing, you know, allowing subgroups to flourish. And then 10 years from now, all of us will have to pay the consequences. And of course, now the Syrians in the hundreds of thousands are suffering now, have died, and what will the future hold for all these refugees?
Well, you're absolutely right.
I mean, we've accepted 11 Syrian refugees into the United States.
You're both absolutely right. I'm not arguing that.
I know.
I was trying to get. I was trying to get to the point of why cable and why we're hearing the kinds of things. Look, we should be talking about Yemen. We should be talking about Syria. We should be talking about genocide. No question about it.
Or the Department of Education or the housing, you know, what's happening at HUD or what's happening at the interior tomorrow. You know, Bear's Ear is what's happening around the country.
I'm trying to explain to you, but I don't think you want to listen to it, which is that if you want to stay on board as the news director at CNN, You are going to be
all Mueller all the time.
Paying what? Well, not even Mueller.
But I mean, we sort of don't like in our on TV, we don't like complex stories. We only give an issue a minute or two. How can you explain certain issues to an American public unless somebody addresses the issue in detail?
How many people listen to C-SPAN? C-SPAN deals. I watched a fascinating agriculture hearing with Purdue yesterday.
Yeah.
I was fixated on it, but I guarantee you the percentage of Americans watching it.
It's only
that
people
great.
Like you and me, but it's fascinating, isn't it?
You know, I think you have to. I do think you have to look on the bright side too, though, and take it where you can get it. I agree with Ira in the sense that, you know, this wall-to-wall coverage, and it gets very repetitive. And I'm a news junkie. I want to listen to it, and yet I turn it on, and just 2 minutes in, I'm like, all right, I heard the same thing this morning. I don't want to hear it again. By the same token, you look at if 60 Minutes does a 14-minute story on Yemen, that is damn good. And not only is it damn good and damn important, it also is the number one rated show on television.
Right.
People are watching.
They
people
are
do
watch.
Care. People, yeah. if you give it to them and you put it into a form that is digestible and well done, they'll watch it.
And the administration, the president, has to be the general interpreter of our foreign policy strategy. He's failing at that job miserably.
Well, he's doing what he said he was going to do. For all the things he's lied about, he said he was going to be an isolationist, and that's basically
indeed.
What he's done.
Well, let's get to a few more. Let's get to a few more letters.
All right, we have 1 minute. Go ahead.
Okay, Peter says, remember, Kim is not quite the hermit he's portrayed as. He attended Le Rosey, exclusive Swiss boarding school for a time, and he's accessed to and reportedly appreciates all facets of Western culture. We cannot forget, says Greg, about the Kurds when discussing U.S. interest in Syria.
Absolutely.
The Kurds
Turkey.
Provide many of the ground forces that defeated ISIS. It's a complicated situation with the interests of Turkey, Iraq, Iran, and Syria hopelessly entangled.
And the Trump administration has not protected the Kurds.
No.
It is outrageous. And the Kurds in Afrin have been attacked by Turkey and have gotten very little, no support from the U.S. And now what's next when Assad wins and goes after the Kurds?
Go quick, Alan.
Alice says, Syria, you can't blame the ban of Syria and then bomb Syria on behalf of the children. You can't ban the children of Syria and then bomb Syria on behalf of the children.
Good point.
Okay, and then lastly, does anyone care about North Korea? We are negotiating their permanent slavery. Are they destined to work in factories while gaining little to uplift their existence?
That is it. My thanks to Teresa Bourgeois, Ira Fussfeld, Vera Carius-Kelly. Alan, you and I will be tomorrow. Join us for the panel. We'll be doing it over at Page Hall. Great panel over there with some environmental superstars. We'll be talking about that. So we'll see you tomorrow. More show after this.